Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Richard Rossi Live.
Hey, Chief, you know there's two things in this world I hate to miss. Lakers game and Rich Rossi Live. You've got to be cuckoo to miss this show. You know what I mean, pal? Hey, wait till you get a load of what Rich is going to talk about today.
Today's going to be a really great show with Brooke Arnold, a comedian in New York who escaped the same fundamentalist organization that was involved with the reality family, the Duggars, who've been in the news a lot lately regarding sexual molestation and the cancellation of the reality show. We're going to talk about some heavy stuff, why that kind of abuse is prevalent in Rigid Religion, and hear Brooke's story and how she's come such a far way now as a comic. We'll be back in about 20 seconds with Brooke Arnold. Welcome back to Richard Rossi Live. Hi, Brooke. How are you?
I'm great. How are you? Sorry.
Well, I'm doing wonderful. Congratulations. You wrote this piece, which took so much courage. I could have been a Duggar wife. You grew up...
Which I did not title. I just like to put that out into the world.
Yeah, you did not title. Yeah, they usually have people at there at Salon and... that are their whole job is just coming up with these titles that'll grab people. So you were you raised? I mean, were you basically born with your family from the time you were a little girl involved in this fundamentalist world?
No, that's actually kind of one of the weird say I guess unusual things, or at least for me, is that. We were not religious at all until I was about 6 or 7. And then my parents got saved, and they started homeschooling us. And then we ended up going to this church of all homeschool people that were members of ATI and became kind of enmeshed in that world. So it was kind of like almost like having two different childhoods, except the... The first one was a lot shorter.
Ian, do you remember much about pre-6? Was it more fun or more free? Or do you remember how it changed after age 6?
It's a very shocking change for me, especially, you know, at that age when you're, you know, I think it would have been very different had I been born into it. Or had I been a little bit older, you know, if you're 12, your brain is a lot more developed and your emotional capacity for dealing with massive changes is more developed. And I was at this kind of very, this very young age, you know, and so I went from, you know, my life was my parents being like, oh, this is so amazing, you're on the honor roll, to just a few months later them telling me school is evil. And your teacher is evil, and you're not allowed to go anymore. And it's kind of like you kind of get whiplash because you're like, I've invested all this energy in being good at school and getting good grades because you told me that was important, and now you're telling me that that was wrong and evil.
Well, you're obviously extremely smart, I mean, making the honor roll, but also your article is really well written. And you know, considering all you've been through, you know, I've known some homeschool folks where the kids aren't really, they're pretty much ignored and not really educated. The ATI is Advanced Training Institute, so that's the organization with which the Duggars are affiliated. And is that the homeschooling affiliation?
Yes. It's interesting. So I think they try... particularly the Duggars try to kind of hide behind, like, well, we only used their homeschool curriculum, like, for a couple of years, you know, like, back in the day. And it is a homeschool curriculum, but it's also kind of it's a complete ideological system. And so, you know, it has an entire set of practices and beliefs. And so the things like the Quiverful, using no birth control, that comes from ETI. The women's way of dressing with the long skirts and the modesty, mm-hmm. that comes from ETI. Like the emphasis on courtship and only kissing at your wedding day, that comes from ATI. So you can be kind of like, you can be someone who follows that organization's, you know, practices and beliefs, even if you're not like an active member of their like homeschool organization.
Mm.
Using their homeschool curriculum at any given point, yeah.
Yeah, you can see in their lives with the 19 kids and the way the wife looks. You mentioned something I didn't know, that Bill Gothard, who's kind of the guru they follow, and when I was a young man, I was under some people for a while that were under this guy. And
under Bill?
Yeah. My father, we were raised Catholic, and my father was a talented guitarist, but he was suffering from an illness, a bipolar illness, and so it was traumatizing as a family, and we went through a lot. But as a young man, was involved with the Baptist Church that was kind of saying, if we follow Bill Gothard and his teachings, that this guy pretty much had the biblical principles, and that, you know, my dad would be, you know, saved, my family would be saved. Even as a young man, there was something in me wondering, even though I was just a teenager, why are these people following this guy with such cult-like devotion? It was really, and I remember the books with the animal profiles. do you remember those? There was always an animal, and the drawings
yeah.
were great. I remember I'm an artist, so I was thinking, these drawings are great, you know?
Oh, my God, you just really cracked me up. I had completely forgotten about that. It was always the eagle with the spread wings, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, I think I tried to block it out, so I was like, oh.
Why?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Brooke.
I was just going to say, yeah, it's interesting because, you know, they you know, have this whole, I think what it does is, you know, it gives people a sense of comfort because Bill Gothard's like, I've got an entire system. You never have to think for yourself again. You never have to wonder again. Like, I'll tell you how to dress and how to think and how to have sex and how to not have sex and how many children to have. And, you know, like, it's kind of like, I think in some ways that's one of the appeals, is that it kind of removes you from responsibility, and it removes you from having to make choices for yourself.
Mm. Wow, how
Bill's
insightful.
Got you, 'cause Bill's got you covered.
And you know what's kind of odd? I mean, you know, like I say, my family was Catholic, and I remember my mom getting in an argument with a priest about birth control. I'm the oldest of five kids, and my mom had, like, me in 63, and my next brother in 64, my next brother in 65. I remember this big fight where she argued with a priest, you know, like asking for some sort of dispensation to, like, give her a break on the birth control issue.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and he said to my mom, and she had us in tow, you know, and I remember the priest saying, God did not intend you to use birth control. My mom was a little feisty, and she said, well, did God intend me to breed like a rabbit, for God's sake? But the thing that my mom used to say, and, you know, that's, you know, pretty obvious, but a lot of Catholics would think, is, okay, this priest has never been married. You know, I love the priest and, you know, appreciate his service and everything, but he's never experienced, you know, being married, having children, the whole thing. But, you know, ironically, in the Protestant fundamentalist world, Bill Gothard, this guy who the Duggars and others revere, he has never been married, has he?
No, he has not ever been married. And in fact, he kind of like uses, there's a specific passage in one of Paul's epistles, and I'm blanking on which one it is now. I think it might be Timothy, in which Paul tells Timothy, it's better to be single and devote yourself to God
mm-hmm.
fully. But it's better to be married and not burn, you know? So if you can't if you can't remain a virgin or remain sexually pure, it's better to get married than to go to hell. But the best thing is to be single, you know. And so Bill Gothard uses his bachelorhood as kind of a proof of his kind of superior godliness, ironically enough.
Wow. Wow, yeah, that's so similar to Catholicism then in that sense. But
yeah.
He was burning, if these allegations are true. He had to step down accused of sexual misconduct with a young girl. So there may be something weird there, huh?
There's been allegations against Bill Gothard for sexual misconduct for decades. It is only because some incredibly brave girls who were his victims created a blog called Recovering Grace. If anybody wants to check it out, they created a blog a couple of years ago and began soliciting stories from other girls who had had the experience of being molested or harassed or inappropriately talked to by Bill Gothard. And it was through this blog that it kind of got enough attention that he stepped down. Now, what's interesting about that is you saw kind of some of the things that were described by the girls on the Recovering Grace website were not dissimilar from my own experience or kind of what I was talking about, in the sense that many of them would be touched by Bill Gothard, or Bill Gothard would come on to them, and they would either not know that it was a sexual advance because no one had talked to them about sex, or they would assume that because it was Bill Gothard doing it, that they were the one who was wrong for interpreting it as inappropriate. Mm.
Yeah, so he's put on such a pedestal that you have that personality cult, plus, like you said, they're not real educated. And your article, not to be indelicate or anything, and of course feel free to not talk about anything you don't want to talk about, but your article was very touching in the sense of you were so vulnerable about how, your own naivete sexually, was very traumatic for you when it seemed like you talked about a kind of a date rape almost experience where you were like, what is going on?
Which
I think is very common for some of these girls. Like, they don't know, they're just so sheltered that they're not prepared to set boundaries in this area.
Yeah. I mean, I think, the kind of system that we have set up now, where you start dating, and I always screw this up, so I don't know what age most people start dating at. Is it, 12, 13? I'm so removed from those things. But say you start dating at 14, okay? Well, probably you're going to go to the golf course with the guy or go to the movie with the guy, and he's not going to be giving you a drink or trying to, drag you back to his apartment and then have sex with you. You're able to kind of be around the opposite sex in kind of a low stakes way, and you kind of get to know what kind of person you're attracted to, or you get to read the signs, of what is appropriate behavior, what's inappropriate behavior, and it's the process. You kind of have these, you're kind of slowly introduced to this thing. What happened to me, was that I got kind of thrust into the world, around 17, 18, and being very sheltered and naive, and I didn't really fully understand what sex was. I didn't really fully understand, the idea of getting drunk or anything like that, and so you go out with the friends from work and they give you your first beer, and then some guy takes, sexual advantage of you. And he's not necessarily doing it in a, in a malicious way, because he's not aware of how unaware he's unaware of how unaware you are, because you don't feel comfortable being I'm an idiot, I don't know what's going on. So it just creates a situation in which you don't get to have that kind of those kinds of experiences of learning how to read people's intentions and learning how to how to assert yourself about what you feel comfortable with happening, in kind of a low stakes environment. And you're kind of forced to, you always feel for lack of a better term, a freak, because you realize how different you are and how different the way that you've grown up is from everyone else. And so you can often even not speak out because you are too embarrassed to speak out.
Yeah, there's so much sheltering. You mentioned your article, even being culturally ignorant of, you know, certain songs or pop culture things, and it's such a weird feeling, I imagine, to, you know, try to reintegrate into society. And you had so much courage to go to the city of New York, which is, along with where I live in Hollywood, those are the two cities that fundamentalists they are, Sodom and Gomorrah, and you came here.
Yes.
Here to New York, and now you're doing stand-up, and your humor, I think humor is such a great way to heal and such a great defense mechanism and coping mechanism to recover is laughter. I mean, like, my wife and I met in an independent Baptist college that was fundamentalist, and, you know, much like your world, you know, the girls had to wear these long dresses, and, you know, secular music and movies were forbidden and all that stuff, and so we joke about it now. Like, we'll make a lot of jokes about the way people thought in that world because we now look detached from it, and it's pretty funny, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So humor, was that, did you gravitate towards being a comic partially to just, you know, just laugh after going through all this?
I think, you know, in some ways, you know, I kind of, you have, like, these crazy stories that, you know, are kind of funny in a way, or tragically funny in a way once you kind of get beyond them, you know. But also, it's kind of like a chicken or an egg kind of thing. I think I naturally mm-hmm. just have a good sense of humor and find mm-hmm. the world amusing. And so I think that was one of the things that, you know, directly made it possible for me to kind of get out and survive and just thrive was that, you know, I was able to laugh if my, you know, lights got turned off. I was able to laugh, you know, about, like, I can make jokes about being a second grade dropout, you know, because it's,
that's,
you know,
wonderful.
What else are you going to do, right? You know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, it's both, you know, I think something that's natural to me that has helped me deal with everything, but then also something that I've been able to use to kind of help me heal also.
Well, for those listening, if you know, to want to see Brooke perform, or, you know, get her book when it comes out, Growing Up Fundy, her website is brookearnold.com, brookearnold.com, and if you want to email us any questions, you can email now to richardrossilive@gmail.com, richardrossilive@gmail.com, or just call the number on your screen, 347-637-2379. Brooke, just hold on. We'll be back in about 20 seconds with you, and just checking in on any questions coming in, okay?
All right. Sounds good.
Okay, we'll be right back.
Sorry, I have a little bit of a cough. I'm going to get it out before I put it back on.
I know what you're thinking. Since the phone lines are all busy, should I or shouldn't I keep calling? Well, if I were you, I'd keep trying. Go ahead and make your day.
We have a question emailed in about the reference to Quiverful. And is that a reference to having a lot of kids? I guess that comes from somewhere in the Psalms, right, about a blessed man has his quiver full of children?
Right, yeah. I think it's in Proverbs. I'm not I'm not sure. It's one of those two for sure. And it's children are a blessing from the Lord, and blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. So it's this idea that God will decide how many children that each person should have. And so to use birth control is to directly interfere with God's will for your life, but also to tell God, I don't want your blessings. You know, I've got enough blessings.
Yeah, not trusting God. I remember there's early fundamentalist figures were against birth control. So John R. Rice and some of these guys put out these booklets. The Duggars have, I guess, 19 going on 20. Now, the big news was this recently, the son admitting to a molestation of, I think, a half dozen girls, five of which were his sisters when he was a teenager, I think 14 or 15. And I saw an interview on Fox, and you know what struck me, Brooke? you know, the women in this culture are always under the man, you know, submit unto thy husband as unto Christ, and wearing, you know, these long dresses, and they're kind of looked at as these objects of temptation that have to kind of cover themselves up. And as the parents talked about the abuse, what really struck me in this Fox interview was it was Josh this and Josh that, and, you know, God forgiving Josh, and, you know, and mm-hmm. I believe in God's love and forgiveness for us all. I have no problem with that. But my problem was, though, that what struck me was there was little talk of the girls. It was all about Josh's restoration. There was like a mention of, you know, yeah, we're concerned about the girls. But it was Josh. There didn't seem to be any talk of how this affects the girls. I mean, that's what struck me.
I'm so happy that you made that point. It's very much how I felt about it when I watched the interview yesterday. In fact, I gave an interview, like a response interview yesterday on the CBS News, and I was really sad that they edited that answer out because I thought it was such a huge and upsetting part of the interview is that they not only neglected to get the son like real psychological, like real certified counseling. They never mentioned any kind of counseling whatsoever for any of the daughters. In fact, mm-hmm. they seemed to have the attitude of, well, they weren't bothered by it, so there wasn't anything wrong going on. You know, they were very much reflecting the kind of the primacy of the male within that culture, that the men matter more than women, and so their daughters' safety and their daughters' well-being seem to be of a lot less important than their son's well-being and their son's experience. And I agree with you. I found that incredibly, incredibly striking, although sadly not surprising. Mm-hmm. Having lived in one of those groups, you know, that's very much the attitude that's present there. And, you know, if, you know, he is being raised to be told that, you know, if he's being raised in a culture that believes, you know, women are not allowed to say no to sex with their husband, mm-hmm. then he's also being raised in a culture that doesn't have any kind of consent. Mm-hmm. And so consent would be a completely foreign concept to a young man growing up in that environment.
Wow, that's a really good point. Yeah, there's a scripture they use in Corinthians about a woman's body doesn't belong to her, it belongs to her husband. And, you know, just any basic psychologist looking at sexual boundaries says, you know, the right to say no at any time, you know, even in the middle of, you know, sexual acts, the woman still has a right to stop it at any point and say no. But that's in the fundamentalist culture. You know, there's this concept of the woman being the property of the man, and even some of their translations of the, you know, Ten Commandments, you know, don't covet your neighbor's property, his animals, his wife, his, you know, she's kind of listed in the property in some of the ways that they read that. So you've come so far, and any of you listening, you can go to Brooke's website, brookearnold.com, and she's performing stand-up. She's mm-hmm. based in New York, and I'm just so thrilled with the response you've got to this. A lot of people have contacted you to say, you know, thank you for your courage to tell your story, because, you know, others have been through similar things, and have you've helped them, and they've reached out to you since you wrote your article in Salon, haven't they?
Yeah, that has to be, like, by far the most amazing thing about this entire experience is, you know, I remember being like a little, like a teenage girl, and I shoplifted a cassette of Tori Amos's Little Earthquakes. Are you familiar with that album?
Oh, you're going to go to hell for that. My God.
Stealing.
A secular tape.
Stealing.
Now, at least if you would have shoplifted a good gospel tape, God would have forgiven you. But Tori Amos, oh, my God.
I stole rock music that a woman is singing, and I think she might be wearing jeans on the album cover.
What? And a woman is not to speak in a company of men. She, you know, she must...
Druid
witches pray over these tapes to invoke demons if you listen to them. You know that, don't you?
Oh, but don't I ever. But I don't know if you're familiar with that album, but Tori Amos is
Which album was it? Which album
was it? It's her first one, Little Earthquakes.
Oh.
Yeah. And
wow.
Tori Amos' father was a Southern Baptist minister, and so she grew up not in, you know, a strict religious environment, not anywhere near what, you know, I was in, but very strict religious
And she has a lot of religious themes on that album that kind of come out of the Crucify song.
Yeah, she does. And, you know, I remember, like, lying in my bed, like, late at night after everybody else had gone to sleep, and I'd have my headphones on and, like, the covers over my head, so in case someone came in, I'd have time to pull the headphones off so I wouldn't get caught listening to it. And I remember just, like, tears streaming down my face and thinking, somebody knows how I feel, you know? Because the crazy thing about this, you know, this way of living is that you believe that, you know, if your church is telling you you're supposed to do this, if you think I don't want to do that, then that's a sin, you know. And everyone's in constant competition to be the most godly, so no one's ever going to say to one another, wow, I really don't want to have 12, 14 children. So, like, Tori Amos was, like, the first person that I ever had, you know, kind of expressed, like, wow, as a woman, it kind of sucks to be in church sometimes. And I thought, you know, I would just cry. And I remember when I first started writing and first started doing comedy, I felt very guilty about it. I felt like it was very selfish and kind of narcissistic, like thinking, like, well, why do I think I have anything that people would want to read or people would want to see, like, this is so vain of me, you know, and I really struggled with that, and I ended up going to see Tori here in New York last year, and she played a couple of the songs, and I remember, like, it transported me back to that place I had been in when I was 13, and I remember sitting there, crying again and thinking, if anything that I ever create can make someone do for someone else what Tori did for me, then that's I will feel like I've accomplished everything I wanted to accomplish on the planet. And then this past week, that actually has happened because thousands of people have written me telling me, I thought I was the only one, you know. And the crazy thing is they come from all kinds of religious backgrounds. There's Mennonites, there's Catholics, there's Mormons, Scientologists, Pentecostals. I've had people write to me from snake handling cults, you know, and Scientologists and, you know, or just some, like, women who are older who feel like, you know, their husbands have always controlled them, or gay people who've, like, left their families because their families wouldn't accept them because they were gay, just all kinds of people. And it made me really happy that I kind of spoke out because I realized I had no idea there were that many people who felt that way.
Well, you know, it's ironic that you have a ministry in the sense of helping and healing people through your humor and through your writing that is far greater than if you would have stayed in this kind of subculture and Bush League.
Right.
You know, you're
That's
in the major
beautiful
leagues.
Way to think about it.
Yeah, your humor as a ministry, your writing as a ministry in the major leagues where millions of people you know, can see Salon, and you've had so much courage. I'm asking them for a little grace because we got a minute left to go, a few minutes over. But what songs? I'm curious on the Tori Amos album. What were the songs you liked the most, or is there certain ones that spoke to you more than other songs?
Definitely, "Precious Things" and "Crucify," as you already mentioned, but phenomenally, I have to say more than anyone, it was "Silent All These Years." There's a line in that song where she says, "My scream got lost in a paper cup. Do you think there's a heaven where my screams have gone?" And I remember just like that, thinking like, I have so much I want to say, and so much I want to be, and so much I want to express, and it just, I can't, you know?
Wow.
Yeah. And that imagery of the paper cup is if, like, your screams are, like, something disposable to other people. You know, there's something that people can take away from you and then just throw away. And I just remember just feeling feeling that so intensely.
Yeah, and it took a lot of courage to, you know, move into the arts as a comic, because the brainwashing in that culture is that, you know, that's idolatry. If you do something you like, if you follow a passion, you know, that... I remember hearing messages in these fundamentalist worlds, because being a musician and an artist, a filmmaker, and this was my selfish narcissism and, you know, my ego, and I needed to quit all that and just, you know, do my talents in the fundamentalist church to win souls. And then I thought about, you know, God's supposed to be a loving father. You know, Jesus said, a good father, if you ask him for bread, he's not going to give you a stone. And my children are artists. My son has a band. And I thought, what kind of a dad would I be when my son is in his room practicing his music? I came in, that's enough of that. You're not spending time with me. You're not glorifying me. Quit this music that you enjoy, son, or I'm going to take away your guitar and your keyboard. I mean, they make God out to be such a jerk, you know?
It's unbelievable, you know, and I think one of the things that I have to say, that one of the big brainwashing things for me is that, like, thinking of, like, God is, he's always judging you and he's always pissed off at you. Like, I kind of, for many, many years, projected that onto the world and felt like the world was always judging me and the world was always disapproving of me, and everyone I met was like that, you know. And it wasn't really until I got to college and started, which was much later because it took me forever to get there after I left church. After I started going to college and I started making, like, real friends who kind of, like, loved me and supported me and encouraged me, that I started to realize, like, oh, wait, it's possible for people to genuinely want good things for me. You know, because you're right in that it goes so far beyond viewing God that way, and it gets put onto, like, how we view everyone, you know. And so if, like, I was, you know, needed something, like I needed money or food or anything, I would never ask for it. I've never been comfortable to ask for it because I feel like, well, if I don't have it, I must not deserve it, you know. And so I had to kind of retrain myself to think, like, you know, yeah, there are jerks out in the world, obviously, but a lot of people are really great. A lot of people are really nice, and they're not just sitting there waiting to judge me or send me to hell.
Well, I'm so grateful they gave us a few more minutes here, because it's been so wonderful. Time has just flown by. I thank you so much, Brooke, for sharing your journey, and I can't wait to see you just continue to blossom and bloom as a comic and a writer. And all of you listening, please check out her website at brookearnold.com. And all the best to you, and I look forward to seeing you perform either here in L.A. or New York or somewhere, and reading your book.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me, Richard. It's been a real delight.
Okay. All right. And all the best to you. Keep writing and keep making us laugh.
I shall.
And God will forgive you as long as you give an altar call at the end of your performance, okay?
Well, you know, I wouldn't. I could use passing around the tithe bowl. That would help me out a lot.
Yeah, some of our listeners are getting our inside fundamentalist jokes, and some of them are like, what are they talking about? But anyways, Brooke, it's been so much fun. All the best to you.
All right. Thanks so much, Richard.
Thank you, everybody, for listening in. And our next broadcast, actor Gavin McLeod, the captain on the Love Boat, star of Mary Tyler Moore Show, and just has more acting credits on his IMDb than just about anybody in the acting world, will be sharing his journey with us next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Thanks for tuning in to Richard Rossi Live. Blessings to all of you.